Well, my uncle was a drummer, and I started playing drums, but it didn't make no music to me. And I said, man, I can't use this. And so I wanted to play trumpet.
That was trumpeter and NEA jazz master, the late, great Donald Byrd. Byrd grew up in the 1940s and 50s, when Detroit was a musical hotbed, exposing him to an endless number of musicians and charting the course of his incredible life.
Bill Jackson, Sonny Stitt, the Jones brothers, Alvin, Thad, Hank, Tommy Flanagan I grew up with, Barry Harris I came up with, Curtis Fuller I came up with, Joe Henderson.
His musical connections were almost as infinite as his thirst for education. Byrd not only earned 6 graduate degrees before he left this earth in 2013, but he started the jazz studies programs at 3 colleges, including Howard University in Washington, D.C. It was at Howard where he founded, shaped, and produced the inimitable band, the Blackbyrds. Today, we'll hear about Byrd's impact from the Blackbyrds drummer, Keith Kilgo. Threaded throughout Keith's commentary, we'll hear pieces from an interview with Donald Byrd himself, conducted by James Graves for Pacifica Radio. Byrd was many things: a scholar, pilot, teacher, jazzmaster, trailblazer. In fact, Donald Byrd changed the game with his 1973 album, Blackbyrd, which at the time was the best-selling album for Blue Note Records. The future Blackbyrds were his backing band, Keith Kilgo.
He was a force in that whole genre of music. Blackbyrd was originally recorded for Lee Morgan, and unfortunately Lee Morgan was killed, and they needed to find someone to do it, and that's how Byrd got Blackbyrd, because the Mizell brothers had already recorded it. And believe it or not, if you look at it historically, Herbie Hancock, which was one of his proteges as well, everybody started putting groove and funk groove. Harvey Mason probably made more money as a drummer than anybody in show business at that time, because he played on Mr. Magic and Blackbyrd and Carole King and everybody, because that groove, that feel had changed for jazz. Jazz was no longer boom, 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 boom. It was no longer that. And it had more repetition, but it gave you an opportunity to play even more things when you really think about it, because there's a lot more room, because it's not filled up with a bunch of chords, you know, open chords, you know, very basic chords, triads and sevenths and ninths, you know, something that you could solo through for hours. Vamps, which basically came from who? James Brown. Okay, so if you combine the jazz piece with the James Brown vamp and you stick some 15, 16-year-old guys on top of it, that's the formula. I first met him at the Left Bank Jazz Society in Baltimore. And I was playing with my dad, of course, in another band. And Donald, Keeter Betts, and I can't remember who else, Reuben Brown, and a few other people were in the band. And so Byrd was like, hey, man, you know, I like the way you play. What's going on? Where you going to school? And I had already gotten accepted to a school in the Midwest, Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois. So he said, well, you're going to go to Brown. Why don't you go? Because he was at Howard. He says, why don't you come to Howard? Well, you know, I want to get out of D.C., you know? So I left, and that was kind of how we first met. And then I went to Bradley for 2 years, and then I met Kevin Tony, who I met over the summer here in D.C. He's from Detroit, and, of course, he was one of Byrd brought him here to go to Howard. And so Kevin ended up living with me, so 2 years went by, and the next thing I know, Byrd is like, okay, you're coming to Howard.
Well, yeah, I was one of the first in, I guess, in jazz education. It helped to popularize that since the late 50s. And I was working with Dave Brubeck and Stan Kitten and all those people. And we were legitimizing jazz education. Billy Taylor was involved. He was really one of the first people that got me involved right after I came out of the Air Force. We were frat brothers. And Billy was into that too. So I helped to establish 3 major departments in this country. The one at Rutgers University, which is still going and got a graduate program, that's a big one. The one at Howard, which is even bigger. And the one at North Carolina Central.
The Jazz Studies program is really what he kind of brought to Howard. Howard University originally is classical music, and people had to sneak out and play jazz on the weekends or whatever, you know, because that school wasn't about that. He brought that to the university, and along with that, how to not make this just going to school for 4 years for music. Okay, well, so what? So you went to school for 4 years, then what? Looking at it from a professional perspective, like us doctors do, you go do internship to go get what? A job as a doctor, and that's because that's what you went to school for. And so that was the whole thing behind having young musicians come in, learn their craft, and then go out and find work and become a professional musician. And he couldn't do it with the entire university, so he selected several guys to sponsor, so to speak, and kind of drive that dream he had. What he did first, he got these established jazz artists for a week, maybe, if that lasted that long, because the old guys and the young guys just, it didn't work. And so Bird said, okay, all right, guess what? I'm getting rid of the old guys. Bye. And so he fired all those guys. And Kevin said, hey, man, we got a gig. Da, 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 da. So, yeah, he could see, like, there's a connection these guys have. As an established artist, I mean, the kids aren't listening to the music I'm playing, you know. And so he saw that, you know. And so as he brought Barney and Joe and all of us together, that we had this energy that was related to our age group. So we had that experience, but also this was the turnaround of the whole music piece because, you know, people want to dance. If you want young people involved in jazz, then it better be something that has a beat to it, regardless of what you play on top of it. So he had all the slick notes and all of the musicality piece. The soul of it wasn't of his generation. So that's what we kind of brought to the table. And when he saw that start to work, he was like, oh, yeah. This, yeah, I got this, you know. I like the party. 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 When they're gonna party, I like the party. And we're gonna party hard. I like all the party. I like all the party. The party. I like the party. When you're getting down, I like the party. Sir's not messing around. He was an educator, a musician who never stayed still. He was always looking for something else in music. But he got a lot of worldly knowledge because he has interest in more than just music. But he uses those interests to include it in music. Black culture, about history.
I got about 3,000 books on black history, rare books from 1700s, the slave codes and stuff like that. My father was a Negrophile. He's a man who was crazy about his culture, his people, and everything.
He brought all of that. I mean, he was very fluent in a couple of foreign languages as well. He spent time in Paris.
I studied with Nadia Boulanger, who's one of the greatest theoreticians. People like Stravinsky on up was associated with Aaron Copland. Michel Legrand, Quincy, studied with her. And Gigi Grace. So not only did I get lessons from Miles and Dizzy and everybody else, but I also knew all the classical players.
The other part of the education was we had to look up artists outside of our genre of music. Jacques Ibert is like a famous French saxophonist, and write out his solo so that you'll understand orchestration in a different way than just the way we do what we do, you know, which is okay, but there's so much more music. So he created that kind of thing, which made us learn more.
My father taught me about the history of my family, about who I was, where I came from. And with him being a Methodist, United Methodist minister, it was always expected of me to perform and to act a certain way. And I had to, and I was born into it. I didn't have any choice in the matter. And it reminds me of something that, a saying that I saw not too long ago, to whom much is given, much is expected.
that's why I'm involved in education, you know, because it's if you can't pass this stuff on to the young people, I mean, I'm not sure what good it is. I mean, we sit around and write books about it, but they don't read the books, then they'll never know. So the first-hand knowledge, you know, bringing up young folks. I've got a singer singing with us now, Paul Spires, and he was one of my students when I was a teacher in D.C. public schools. But we wrote a song that's on Gotta Fly called I Need Your Love. It took us 2 years to do it. I'd written the music, and he finally graduated and so on. So I'd taken him to Europe. He's gone to London. We've gone to Spain and all these places. You know, and that is how this thing lives. And that was Bird's whole piece. You know, he took Herbie Hancock, and got him started moving in the direction he was moving in. But rather than for one guy, to do it for a group of guys. And so we were that part of that next piece of it. And that ideology, I'm a firm believer in. I will live my life pursuing that. You know, we have to move more bodies in this business. And that was Bird's, you know, philosophy. It's not, well, so there's five guys here. Next time, 10. The next time, 20. That carries the legacy. No, we can't stay, gotta be on our way.
That was educator and drummer for the Blackbirds, Keith Kilgo, on his mentor and NEA jazz master, Donald Byrd. The excerpts you heard of Donald Byrd come from an interview conducted by James Graves. The audio is part of the Pacifica Radio Archives' From the Vault series, which was partly supported by the NEA. You can find all the music credits for this piece in the transcript. For the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm Adam Campy.